Good morning. Good morning, Rabotai. Welcome to Breakfast and the Class. We'd like to welcome long-time listeners, first-time attenders, Avi Peltz and Mishpachto. Nachon? Hazak Baruch, what are the kids' names?
Yosef and Rachel.
Yosef and Rachel. They should live long, happy, healthy lives with all beracha. Also, we have Shlomi Berger driving in. Hazak Baruch, welcome to the class from very, very far to come to be able to learn Torah with us. It's fantastic. Okay, my friends, today's breakfast in the class is dedicated in honor of Alan Light, Amnon Ben Yisrael Vachana, by his daughter and son-in-law, Danielle and Rafi Hasbani. What a zechut. Also, a dedicated loving memory of Mrs. Lily Safra Lunishmat Leah Batchana. Her philanthropy has reached so many throughout the entire world. And as well, a dedicated loving memory of Lunishmat Meir Ben Leah by his grandson, Meir Shwai. Please make Berachot Lunishmato. And Breakfast in the Class, also sponsored by David E. Ash. And the new website where you could purchase gear, capacityforgood.com. Hazak Baruch. My friends, sometimes the words of Torah are lengthy in order to be able to draw out the point that we're trying to understand. So we'll have to learn a whole story, ask a big question on the story, many, many pizukim. Sometimes in this class, we have taken one word and brought out many lessons from one extra word or one word that's said in a funny way. However, the profundity of Torah is such that many times we will learn a tremendous lesson even from one letter. Can anyone remember an example that we've had where we learned an entire lesson from one letter?
Small Aleph.
Small Aleph. Where else did we have one letter lesson? Small? A small Vav. Where do you have small Vav?
Like Shat.
We've also had Vislivkot, rather sponsor Av Vilibkota. So we had a small we had Chayisara as well. We had that there. Sometimes we even learn lessons, not even from the words, but from the ta'amim. From the ta'amim themselves, the musical notes that are written underneath the letters, we've learned lessons from that. As an example, by Lot, Vayit Mahama, right? Shashelet, exactly. We learn lessons from there too. There's many, many different examples. Rafi Hasbani in our Pizmonim Friday night this past week did a whole Dvar Torah on Kadma Ve'azla, or Azla Girish, on the fact that the Jewish people left. They left very quickly. And we shared the words of the Vilna Gaon that taught a tremendous lesson on Dargat Tebir, on the breaking of the ladder when the fellow fell from the ladder. So we've had many lessons from very small things. I want to bring out one lesson from a very small thing that perhaps you pass by without even noticing, and you maybe passed by it many, many times before, but didn't ask a simple question. The pasuk says, "Vayifen Paro, vayavo el beto, veloshat libo gam lazot." Paro sees what's going on. Vayifen, he turns away. Vayavo el beto, he comes to his house, veloshat libo gam lazot, and he did not pay attention also to this. What is this also to this that the pasuk is talking about? What are we referencing that Paro did not pay attention to? The pasuk actually tells us that in the first makkah, in the first plague, we're in Parashat Vayera now, so we're going to see seven plagues in this week's parasha. Easy way to remember is Vav Aleph, first two letters, is seven. Second parasha that deals with the makot, Bo, is Bet Aleph, first two letters is three. So the first seven are in Vayera, second three are in Bo. Okay, the first makkah is the makkah of blood. So Moshe turns the entire river, the Nile, into blood. Okay? And Paro turns away, not impressed. Vayifen Paro v'yavo el beto. Paro turns, he comes back to his home, v'loshat libo gam lazot. And he did not pay attention also to this miracle. Now, to me, there's something here which is very, very strange. You know, I want you to imagine, as an example, you know, you go to a passport agency and they ask you for a form of ID. Anyway, what do? You pull out your driver's license. You give them your driver's license. The person says, "I'm really sorry, sir. A driver's license is not a valid form of identification." So the guy says, "No problem. Hold on. I have something else." He goes around the corner, comes back 3 minutes later with an envelope the size of his whole body. Okay? The person, what's in the envelope? He says, my ID. Opens up the envelope, and he has a giant 4-foot by 3-foot photocopy of his driver's license. The guy says, moron, I told you your license is not a valid form of ID. Why are you bringing me a bigger version of the ID that I said is not going to work? Moshe has already turned water to blood. Do you guys remember when he first came to Paro? What did Paro say? Whoopty flipping do. He had his own guys also turn water into blood. And he says to Moshe, you're trying to bring magic to the kingdom of magic, to Egypt? We could do that too. We don't need it. So what does Moshe do? First makah, turn the river to blood. That's just more of the thing that I already told you doesn't impress me much. My friends, what is happening? You like when we sprinkle? You're like, okay, fine. My friends, what are we saying? What is happening? What's going on? I want to point out something else. The Pasuk seems to say something that, again, if you maybe don't go to classes, you read the Torah, you don't notice because you're not paying attention that something there in the Pasuk seems to be a little maybe out of order or unnecessary. Paro's out there. He sees the river. It's blood. I mean, that's a pretty impressive sight. Let's see, he's not going to be impressed by it. Where would he not be impressed by it? On the riverbank. The Pasuk tells us, Paro turns around, Vayavoel Beto comes home, and doesn't pay attention. So one could explain and say, yeah, you know what? It means that it didn't impress him, and he went home, but it just says it out of order. But for anyone that learns Torah, seriously, you know that the Torah is very specific. So the order is backwards. It should say, Paro was not impressed, and he turned and went home. It doesn't say that. It says he turned and went home, and he wasn't impressed. So one of the commentators explains that there was something in Paro's home that made him not be impressed. So he was kind of a little bit shaken, gets home, and now he's not impressed by the miracle. One of the opinions is that there was something on the a beautiful painting that he had in his bedroom that used to bring him comfort. What was this painting of? It was still in the palace. It was a painting of Sarah Imenu. That the first Paro, when he had Sarah, he was so struck by her beauty, so he drew this magnificent, they had this magnificent piece of artwork, you know, put in the king's bedroom of Sarah Imenu. And when he would look, he would be calm, he would be taken by her beauty, and he would relax. One of the opinions says, that's what it means. He was overwhelmed, he goes home, and now he's okay, because he's got this thing to calm him down. Okay? That's one idea. One concept. My friends, I want to share perhaps a little bit of a different idea. What was Moshe thinking? Why was the first Nes just a repeat of the first trick that Moshe pulled? And the answer is, it wasn't. Not at all. You see, the first time what Moshe was showing Paro is that they could turn water to blood. That's a parlor trick. Now he was showing Paro something fundamentally different. Because you have to remember that in Egypt, the source of all of their livelihood, the source of their food, where was it? It was the Nile. But not only that, if you remember, you'll remember that Paro was given a blessing by Yaakov. And what was the blessing? The blessing was that when he would come towards the Nile River, what would happen? The river would overflow its banks and it would sustain all of Egypt. Paro began to use this as what? As a method to be able to illustrate not just that he was powerful, but that he was God. Because he would say, for I created the Yaor, I rule. I'm God, Vani Asitani. I made myself. I am a God, I am a deity. Worship me. So Paro's source of godliness, the Egyptians' source of beneficence, of benevolence, their beracha, where was it? It was the Nile River. When Moshe turned the Nile to blood, what was he doing? He was in effect telling Paro and the Egyptians, I took your God and I murdered him. That's the power that I have. Where do we find a repeat of this idea? Perhaps in a more sad circumstance. In the Gemara tells us about Titus, that when Titus came to the Beit HaMikdash, and he destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, he took his spear and he stabbed the parochet, which is the curtain that hung between the Holy and the Holy of Holies. And the Gemara says, and dam was mivatzvetz v'yotze. God wanted to show that he was illustrating his commiseration with the Jewish people's suffering. So he had blood miraculously ooze from the parochet as a sign of solidarity to the Jewish people that were now going to be driven into exile. Titus didn't read it that way. How did Titus understand it? Kasavar, he thought that he killed God, Bar Menan. This example of Moshe turning the Nile River into blood was a message to Paro. All hell is going to cut loose in the next few days. Everything that you could ever imagine going wrong is going to go wrong. Because come hell or high water, the Jewish people are leaving Egypt. We can do it nicely, or we can do it in a way which everything falls apart. You choose. So what's the first thing that he does? He doesn't bring frogs. It's not about the annoyance. It's not about the fact that if the Egyptians wanted water, they would have to pay the Jews to get that water. What was the point? The point was, this thing that you think protects you, whatever you're putting your faith in, stop putting your faith in it. It's as good as dead. Paro, he sees this sign. Could you imagine the thing that you used to become a god? Your whole narrative is dead. The thing that you used to become an elected official, that's now gone. How do you recover from that? I feel like Paro should start a support group with Santos. That's another story for another day. Right? It's all a lie. It's up in smoke. What do you do? Vayifen Paro v'yavo el beto. Paro turns and he comes back to his house. V'lo shat libo gam lazot. You see, a person's home has a tremendous capacity to be able to comfort someone. I want to talk about one other example of this. In the story of Purim, which we're going to learn about in Masechet Megillah that we're starting at 10:15 this morning, shameless plug, Haman is humiliated in front of the entire kingdom. Let's just recall the story for a minute. Haman walks around and there's a decree, a royal decree, that everyone in the nation, every single person, men, women, and child, if they see Haman, what do they have to do? They need to bow in front of him. Could you imagine? Could you imagine the power, the kavod mania, the narcissistic personality disorder that would emerge from that? Imagine everywhere you went, people literally full on bowed down to you. And then Haman, in a shocking turn of events, is forced to lead the horse with Mordechai, his nemesis, on the horse. He's dressed like a king. I'm the dib pulling the horse, the stable boy. Could you imagine what Haman felt in that moment? I could imagine Haman and Paro feeling similar in this moment and in that moment. And what does Haman do? He turns and comes home, and he tells them all everything that's going on with him. This is the second time he tells his family what's going on with him. The first time is when he sees Mordechai not bow and they give him advice and he feels better. The second time they come back, he tells everyone what happened and he's covered now in the waste that his daughter dropped on his head. He comes back and they tell him, what does the house tell him? The house tells him, if this Mordechai guy is a Jewish guy and you started to fall, you're going to keep falling. Napol tipol lefanav. You're going to keep falling. And like they say in another industry, the house always wins. He goes to the party, and what happens? Indeed, his fate is sealed because he falls. He stands by the bed, he's begging for his life, and he falls on top of Esther. Achashverosh walks in, sees Haman on top of Esther. He says, "Hagam lichvosh et hamalkah imi babayit." You're trying to take out the queen with me in the house? The words come out of Achashverosh's mouth. Pnei Haman chafu, they cover his face, they put him on the gallows. My friends, we see in this story of Haman what we're seeing in the story here of Paro. The house has a function. The function is that when people experience pain and suffering, they experience degradation out in the world, there is a safe space that they can come back to where the worst thing that you've experienced can be made okay. There's no more devastating thing that could happen to Paro than what happens to Paro this morning. His whole world is blown up. Not just his business model, not just his parnassah. His literal identity. He comes back home a broken man. He walks into his house, and what do we read? V'yoshat libo gam lazot. Even to this, he was capable of not paying attention. That is the power of a healthy home. It is restorative. Think of these words. It is restorative. Last night I went to play basketball. There was a bunch of kids that were playing on the court for the first 20 minutes, half hour that we were there. Anyway, the kids, they come back to the bench to get their stuff, and I'm sitting on the bench, and I see one kid turn to another kid as they're leaving, and he slings his bag over his shoulder, and the kid turns to the other, and he goes, "Wow, that was crazy, right?" And the other kid just looks at him, and you could tell that he's like a little bigger kid, same class, a little bit bigger, a little bit better, and he says, "You're just not good at basketball, like at all. You're just not good." And I just see this kid. Do you remember seeing the kids last night? You're just not good. And I just see this kid, little kid, maybe he's 11, okay? Like with the cool hair type, you know? And the kid's just sitting there holding his phone, like in shock. Speechless that someone could say that to him. You just like cut him like that. Okay, so the daddy in me wanted to punch the other kid in the face, okay? But I also remember from your own kids that when you fight a kid's battles for them with their friends, they're more embarrassed because they needed you to take care of their problems and they couldn't cover it themselves. So I bit my tongue and I watched him walk away and I watched him put a fake smile on his face as he walked back up to the other group of kids around their coach. Fake as saccharine, and it was so upsetting. And I thought to myself last night about this Dvar Torah. He's going to walk back home after being bullied or after being made fun of. And you know what? In a good home, it goes away. You walk in, your mom, your dad gives you a hug. How was it? Terrible. A stink. And a good parent knows how to smile, tell the kid, "It's okay. You'll get better." Or, "It's all right, you're really good at hockey. You know, can't be good at everything." Really, that's what the home is supposed to do. It's supposed to fix, it's supposed to restore, it's supposed to heal. My friends, sometimes when I learn something like this, I learn about what I'm learning. But if you stop there, you are literally taking the Torah that God gave us to change our lives, and you're cutting its legs off. Because the whole point of Torah is u'bishoch b'cha u'b'kumecha, when you lie down, when you get up, u'b'lechtecha b'derech, and when you go on your way. Your journey, wherever you go, whatever you do, is supposed to be influenced and enhanced by Torah. So you read about Paro being made okay with the worst news that he could get because he walked into his house. Doesn't even tell us what he got in his house. But even Paro had a home that could make him feel okay with the day that he had. You're a husband. You're a wife listening to this. You're a child. You see someone walk in the door of your house. If they're your family member, you could tell if their face doesn't look the way it normally looks. sensitive people can notice it on people who are not their family. Yosef notices it on the Sar HaMashkim and on the Sar HaOfim. How come your faces have fallen today? What's the matter? Right? What's the matter? But at least of your own family, you could tell if your mom, if your dad, if your husband, if your wife, if your son, if your daughter, if they're going through something, if they had a bad day. And think to yourself, what can I do to be able to make that better? Some parents fly in and smother. They smother with better. And it's up to each and every father or mother to understand if that's what's needed. Kids pushing you away, you're smothering harder. Sometimes that's what the kid needs, and they want to push you away, but they really want you to do it. Stop, you have to say that. No. Doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter what you think, you know, you don't even know, you don't even play baseball. But still the kid wants to hear it. Sometimes the kid needs a little space, and they want you to change the subject, they want you to help. They want you to help them think about something else. They want you to talk about sports. They want you to talk about something so they can get their mind off of it. However you choose to address the issue, that's up to you and your wisdom. But recognize that that's your role. You see, Haman, when he walks into the door and Mordechai doesn't bow down to him, what should his family have chosen? What should they have said? Dude, get over it. There's one man. The guy's psycho. He has a death wish. Leave him alone. Who cares about him? You know what? Pass a decree. Get rid of him. Move him to some other area where you don't have to see him. Or, if this is bothering you so much, Abba Haman, I know an amazing therapist. Okay? His name is Charvona. He's fantastic. Not the other Charvona, whatever. It's a common name in Shushan. Do you understand? The family had a chance to be able to right that wrong. And ironically, what would have happened in the story if Mordechai doesn't have, if they don't have this fight, if he doesn't build those gallows? It's clear in the story, Haman doesn't lose his life. So every family gets a chance. Someone comes home and tells you about a fight that they had with their coworker or their boss at work. What do you want to do? Pour gasoline on the fire? Make it worse? That's what Zeresh does. That's what his sons do. Someone tells you about the way someone treated them in shul. What do you want to do? You can't stand for that. Or do you want to just tell them, look, the guy's a muppet. He probably had a bad day. Forget it. It's not worth your time. The right family makes things better. The wrong family makes things worse. Don't be the wrong family. Vayifen paro v'yavo el beto v'loshat libo gam lazot. A good family could help a member of their family get over anything. May Hashem bless us, first of all, to not have great things to get over. But when we have great things to get over, may Hashem bless us to be in the bosom of a family that understands, that gets it, and that tries its best to be able to make it okay. Baruch Adonai Le'olam.